Welcome back. Remember, if you bought a house anywhere but Santa Barbara, you didn't pay enough. My guest today is Mr. Dan Walters. He's been in the newspaper business for 50 years. He's a syndicated columnist based out of the Sacramento Beer. How's that good for a little early morning brew? The Sacramento Bee, and he appears several times per week in the Santa Barbara News Press. He studies and writes about California politics, the budget, and anything that matters in California. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Dan Walters.
Thank you.
Enjoy reading your local columns. I cut out a couple here. We're going to talk a little bit about Governor Brown and the budget and what he's trying to do. And one of the things he's trying to do is dissolve what's known as the Redevelopment Agency. And Santa Barbara has a very strong redevelopment agency. They made Paseo Nuevo happen. They do a lot of things, some with housing, some with commercial. And they're panicked, and they're trying to, like, loan out money and spend money now. What's your take on Brown's idea to do away with the redevelopment agency? What do you think of the idea, and what's the pros and cons, negative impacts and positive impacts?
Well, I've been really supportive of it in my column because I've covered redevelopment in California for 35 or 40 years, and I've seen it evolve from something that was pretty small and pretty simple and pretty straightforward into something of a governmental monster. I mean, it's grown like crazy. Why? Because after Proposition 13 passed in 1978, cities, particularly cities, almost all redevelopment agencies are operated by cities, a couple by counties, but most by cities. Cities felt a pinch, and they were looking for devices to encourage the development of land in long ways that would increase their property and sales taxes, and they started taking a very expansive view of redevelopment, which was originally set up in the 1940s, 1950s, to handle blighted urban land. You have to land to be in a redevelopment agency. It's supposed to be blighted. And the cities took a very, very expansive view of what blighted meant. I remember one city that declared land blighted because it was subject to periodic flooding. And it was subject to periodic flooding because it was in the middle of a marsh. I mean, you know, so it was blighted. And so they took this very expansive view, and redevelopment agencies started taking more and more land under their purview. And the cities were attracted by the idea that all the so-called incremental value added to the land by the redevelopment action, the taxes, the property taxes on that property would remain with the city. They wouldn't have to be shared with counties and school districts and that sort of thing. And number two, a lot of this development that occurred in these redevelopment areas was hotels and retail business that generated other taxes, sales taxes, hotel taxes, and so forth, that stayed within the city as well. So as a result, redevelopment has become there. Over 400 redevelopment agencies in California. Almost every city of any size has one, a couple of counties as well. And they got to the point where about 12% of all the property in California is in a redevelopment agency. Or put it another way, about 12% of all the property taxes collected in California stay with redevelopment agencies, over $5 billion a year. It's as much as the entire property tax bill was in California after Proposition 13 passed in 1978.
What was the number? Now, what was the number? 12% is what?
12% of all property taxes in California are retained by redevelopment agencies. In some cities,
gave the dollar amount.
Oh, it's over $5 billion. It's actually close to $6 billion.
Okay.
And in some cities, the redevelopment property taxes are like three-fourths of the whole property tax bill in a city, in a few. I'm sure probably not true in Santa Barbara, but it's true in some cities. What happened then is along came Proposition 98 in 1988, that set a floor under school spending in California. It said the schools had to get X amount of money every year, depending on a very complicated formula. And whatever they don't get out of property taxes, the state has to make up the difference. But what happened is more and more property taxes flowed in through the redevelopment coffers, that money wasn't going to the schools. So the state had to pony up money that the schools were not getting from redevelopment agencies. And that amounts to close to $2 billion a year that the state has to... It's a $2 billion problem for the state and contributes to its $20 billion a year annual deficit. It's about 10% of the deficit is the state giving schools money that they don't get from property taxes and redevelopment areas. And so for the last couple of years, this has become a real burning issue in Sacramento. In a couple of years, the state just grabbed that redevelopment money and said they had to have it. And then the voters passed Proposition 22 last year that said the state can no longer grab local money, including redevelopment money. So the governor says, okay, in that case, we'll abolish the entire redevelopment program, because we can do that, he says. And that way, all of that property tax money that's flowing to the redevelopment agencies now goes into the pot, and everything that isn't needed to honor redevelopment bonds, debt obligations, will then be available to go to schools and counties and so forth. Highly controversial. The cities are up in arms over the thing. It's a lot of money. And very controversial, but it has brought into the fore the whole issue of whether these redevelopment agencies have gotten out of hand. For example, redevelopment agencies in California have run up $90 billion in debt. 90, N-O, 90. 9-0, $90 billion in debt. And most of this debt just in the last 10 years, by the way. So you've seen this explosion of redevelopment. And siphoning away more and more of the property tax dollars, and now there's backlash in Sacramento. And by the way, periodically the legislatures try to tighten up on the definition of blight, so the cities would be more constrained in what they do.
Yeah, you know, in Santa Barbara, I think in Santa Barbara, the definition of blight is it doesn't have a full 180 degree ocean view.
Well, that may be true.
That's blight.
In theory, that has to be proven. In other words, to have a redevelopment project and to create and extend the redevelopment project, you have to prove the existence of blight. And simply declaring it to be blighted doesn't really work. If somebody is opposed to it, they can go to court and say, prove the blight. And some of these things have become... Now, what's happened is a lot of cities have rolled into Sacramento seeking specific exemptions for their redevelopment projects from the blight designation. The thing has become a very, very complicated, big-money thing. I mean, you're talking about $90 billion of debt and almost $6 billion a year in property taxes that are diverted. You're talking about big-time money, and so that means big-time lobbyists. So everybody has a stake in the thing, the redevelopment agencies, these employees of them. And city governments, a lot of city governments, have siphoned off that redevelopment money to pay the salaries of police and fire and city managers and that sort of thing, which is questionably legal. They go through a bunch of hoops trying to make it legal, like overhead and that sort of thing. But this thing has become a real monster. I've been covering this thing for years, and I've just watched it evolve into a kind of a monster, really. It's beyond control. And the governor said, time to be done, time to give it over. And he's got support for that. He's got support from public employee unions who want some of that money for themselves. He's got support from county governments who see their money being siphoned away by city redevelopment agencies. He's got support from some right conservative Republicans who don't like the idea that redevelopment agencies can come in and condemn land.
Well, that's a question I wanted to interrupt you. And I also want to go back a little bit when you talked about this Prop 98, how it evolved and the schools getting money and siphoned away from schools. That's very interesting. But how come a Republican governor like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you'd think he would have come up with this idea? But, you know, is it not a conservative idea? It's more of a liberal idea?
Well, he just took the money. But you can't take the money now. You can't just say, hey, redevelopment agencies, give us a couple of billion dollars a year like Arnold Schwarzenegger did, because the voters passed Proposition 22 last November. You can't do that anymore. He wasn't concerned about redevelopment per se. He just wanted the money. Well, now you can't take the money unless you do what Jerry Brown does, and that's abolish redevelopment altogether.
Okay, very interesting. So Arnold got the end run. Prop 22 was pushed,
right.
And I wonder if Prop 22, if people really knew what they were doing. What do you think of overall? Talking with Dan Walters, syndicated columnist out of the Sacramento Bee. Unless you want to change the name to the Sacramento Beer, maybe there is a company called the Sacramento Beer. You should.
It's actually McClatchy Newspapers that owns the Sacramento Bee, the Fresno Bee, the Modesto Bee, and a whole bunch of other newspapers, including the San Luis Obispo Press Tribune all over the United States.
They have a hive of bees. So Diane Walters appears in the Santa Barbara News Press several times a week. He writes great columns, and he's been a guest on this program graciously several times. So I remember when I first started in 1998 in this radio show. I was in real estate for 10 years prior, and trying to find out very naively, hey, how does this property tax works? Because Santa Barbara has expensive homes, expensive commercial property. We're generating a real high amount of property taxes. And so do we get more? And I remember someone answering this and saying, no, it has to be evened out because you don't want some poor communities, rural counties, really having no money. So it's kind of redistributed in some kind of equitable way. So, okay.
Well,
so there's a little caveat to that as well?
Yeah, and the caveat is that the only time property tax money stays within the county in which it's collected and is distributed then to all local agencies, cities, counties, the county government, the city government, special districts, school districts, fire districts, all those things, according to a formula. And a formula basically is different for every county, and it all depends on how that tax money was divvied up prior to Proposition 13. It gets a little more complicated than that. But then the real complication is that the schools then get property tax money in varying amounts depending on a whole bunch of factors, and then the state has to make up the money that they don't get from the property taxes.
And then we can dovetail.
If there's a redistribution, the redistribution flows from the fact that the state makes up property tax, what money to the school, their guaranteed income, that the property tax doesn't deliver. And so that's where it is. But
go back to Prop 98. You said it was 1988. Prop 98 came out saying that schools had to get property tax money? Is that what you said?
No, they always got property tax money. What it says is that each school district is entitled to a certain amount of money, and it's a very complicated formula, and it works out to be a number. It's called a revenue limit. And school district X is entitled to X amount of dollars from period. And anything it doesn't get from property taxes, the state makes up to bring it up to that number. So let's say, hypothetically, a school district's entitled to $10 million. That's their number that's calculated for them. And the property taxes provide $3 million of that, then the state's got to make up the other $7 million. If they get more property taxes, then the state has to, let's say they get $4 million, then the state only has to kick in $6 million to bring them up to that
this allocation
level that they are legally entitled to.
So Prop 98 in 1988 created an allocation, some kind of level that says we've got to at
revenue
least...
Called a revenue limit.
Okay, and this
That's the official name of it.
Revenue limit. And so that was created, and any shortfall, the state has to make up, and you're saying that that amounted to $2 billion a year that the state has to pay. So then Arnold changed it around. He started siphoning money away from redevelopment agency. And then in 2010, Prop 22 said the state can't grab the money because everyone really wants local control. California wants local control away from the federal government, and Santa Barbara and all the little cities and counties, they want local control over their money. So maybe that's why they passed Prop 22. So now in 2011, Governor Brown wants to do away with the redevelopment agency. And the critics say that we're going to have what can the critics argue that we're going to have blighted areas that we
The critics argue basically that redevelopment projects have bolstered economic activity in local communities that would be threatened if in fact redevelopment agencies are abolished, and along with hundreds of thousands of jobs. Now the other side, the critics of redevelopment, including by the way the Public Policy Institute of California, which did a massive study on redevelopment a few years ago, and the legislature's budget analyst, say, balderdash, it doesn't work that way. All that a city really does with redevelopment is subsidize development that either would occur already without the subsidy, or you're stealing it from some other town. In other words, you get a big box store in one town because it didn't go to another town because the town that got it, offered subsidies under the redevelopment plan, so that there's really no net economic gain out of redevelopment. It merely distributes the activity that already would occur if you didn't have redevelopment, and makes a bunch of developers rich by giving them millions and millions and millions of dollars in subsidies to put up hotels or nightclubs. Probably one of the most famous examples is here in Sacramento. Very recently, the city put up $7 million to subsidize a mermaid bar, a bar in which you have mermaids running around in the big tanks for the patrons to ogle while they're drinking at the bar, called a dive bar. So the city put up millions of dollars to subsidize that and at a restaurant next door, and that's the sort of thing that goes on. The question is, should while schools are hurting for money, while you're laying off firemen and policemen and all this kind of stuff, should this limited pot of money be continued to be used for these kinds of subsidies, or should it go into the general pot of money that goes to all public services and not be restricted just to whatever the redevelopment agencies want to spend it on?
And maybe the argument against that, maybe the argument against that is that people feel that if the money goes to Sacramento, it falls into some big abyss and it'll be wasted.
It wouldn't go to Sacramento. It would stay within the community. It would simply be available for other government services rather than confined to the redevelopment agency.
Ah, I like that. I like that. Now,
the counties would get more money, for example. Counties would get more money out of this thing.
No, the county's always getting the short end of the stick here in Santa Barbara County. What was it with a think tank, a nonpartisan group
called the Public Policy Institute of California. It's in the Bay Area. It's in San Francisco, and it does deep studies on public policy issues in California and does polling and everything, and it's supported by a group of foundations. It's been in business for 12 or 15 years.
Public Policy Institute of California?
Yeah, PIPIC, Public Policy Institute of California.
PIPIC. That's kind of close to a Yiddish word, I think, called PIPIC. PIPIC was your belly button. And did they really use the word balderdash in their argument?
No, they didn't use that phrase. They used the academic version there, which is basically they cannot find any benefit that the redevelopment people say is there. They say it's not. And the ledge analyst directly attacked that theory and directly attacked the statements of the California Redevelopment Association that if you do this, it'll imperil 300,000 jobs and so forth. And the ledge analyst said that's absolutely untrue, that there's no evidence that that would occur.
I'm wondering if we could take a commercial break and get you to hang on and do another shorter segment.
Sure.
Would you be available to do that?
I just finished working on my income taxes. I'm happy for have a break.
And today, Teddy's your day off. You're actually not at...
Yeah, it's a day off. It's a holiday.
It's a holiday, and you're working on your holiday. We really appreciate that.
I'm working on my income taxes mostly.
Well, that's not much of a holiday. Dan Walters works out of the Sacramento Bee. He's a syndicated columnist, appears throughout the state in the Santa Barbara News Press several times a week. He studies and writes about California politics, the budget, anything that matters in California. He's, as I recall, you've been in the newspaper business 50 years, right? You celebrated that anniversary not too long ago.
50 years last September.
Yeah, and so we'll take a break. I'd like to come back and talk a little bit on specific money that maybe that happens in Santa Barbara and what's happening with panhandling, aggressive panhandling, and how they're trying to spend money to try to mitigate that problem. And someone wrote a letter to the editor and saying, well, you know, there must be laws against panhandling, vagrancy. Why don't they just enforce those laws? And I don't think there are. I think they did away with those laws. But we'll see what Dan Walters has to say. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com, 452-2428, 452-CHAT.